Okay, money and markets. Number one story has to be the disappearance of the Malaysia Airlines plane. What happened? We have no way of knowing. Watching it and watching the discussion and the facts, people trying to seek out any facts at all, you get a feeling of high strangeness. Of course, the possibilities are many. Based on feedback from several pilots in our subscriber base, I believe, I certainly believe it could be an accident. But I think we're just going to have to wait for more facts. One subscriber said, posted a question, do you have any idea why someone decided to make the Malaysian airliner disappear? We don't know yet. I would, you know, the largest probability, of course, is that it was an accident. But let's just see what the facts show as they come out. In theory, could it have been sabotage? Yes. If you ask me what the most likely cause of sabotage would be, I would say it was corporate. It's what I call mob marketing. Unless you buy from us or use this, this is what happens to you. We have very high stock market aerospace stocks and defense stocks under great pressure. The pressure to generate earnings is unbelievable. Of course, we know they're looking for more foreign sales. Could it be to blackline the airlines or other related parties? There's just no telling, but my guess is, if anything, the chances are this is mob marketing. It certainly adds to the chill running through the body politic globally. If you've ever watched these very strange airline investigations, there was a great effort by a lot of very good investigative reporters to get to the bottom of the TWA investigation with the help of some excellent congressional staff in the 90s. And Jim Sanders finally made a very fine documentary that shows the kind of obstacles that are presented in these kind of crashes to getting and finding and publishing the truth. So this could take a while, but my guess is over time we'll see enough facts to make an educated guess, but it's gonna take some time, and I would just encourage everyone to say we don't know until we know. The Ukraine turned a tad more deadly serious. I said to someone 2 weeks ago, we know the squabble will turn serious if the U.S. slams down the oil price. And sure enough, that's what happened this week. We opened up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve for the first time in several years. And the Joint Chiefs announced they were prepared to take military action. That's strong stuff. And there were reports that the Blackwater mercenaries were showing up in the Ukraine. Obviously, it's more politic for the U.S. to pay mercenaries to land than army troops right now. The population is very war-weary, and this is an election year. And obviously, landing the U.S. Army officially is going to, is an act of state. It's an act of war. It would cause, or it could be presumed to be an act of war. The Russian stock market continued to fall. It's way down for the year. But the U.S. market move up has also stalled, and the U.S. dollar index has weakened noticeably as well. It's well below the 80 where it started the year. One subscriber wrote a question. Catherine, a friend of mine, commented today that his missionary brother currently in Europe had called to ask what is happening to the American banks because the media over there is talking about an American banking crisis going on right now, and he was worried about his American holdings. Why should European media think we have a crisis now? Doug, it's interesting. I've been getting numerous people sending rumors of a weakened dollar, major dollar reset or crisis. I don't see any hard evidence of that. I've been assuming it's disinformation and part of the economic warfare. But of course, the global fundamentals are dreadful. We have an article up on the blog. Global debt exceeds $100 trillion. If you look at the market of the big bank stocks, I just don't see any pressure. I just don't see any indication of a major crisis underway. China is proceeding to reform its shadow banking system. Keep an eye out for a bank deposit solution. If that happens, it's going to draw a lot more money back into the traditional banking system. They are going to have to suffer with a variety of lender defaults. You've got a lot of leverage in the shadow banking system. That process of reform means slower growth. It's bad news for the base metals. Copper got hit particularly hard over the last week, and it's bad news for the other emerging markets that supply commodities and other goods and services to China. China's a big driver in the global economy. Unemployment in the U.S., problems in the Ukraine, slower growth in Europe, slower growth in China, planes disappearing, weird weather, all of it is combining to create a new round of nervousness about the state of the world. and the economy. We had one subscriber write in and ask, "Dear Catherine, in your opinion, why has the price of gold risen almost $130 an ounce within the past 60 days? For this time of year, that's not a really impressive run. You know, I have to say, I was, you know, if we were going to have a strong period in this period, I was expecting or certainly hoping for more. You know, the question in everybody's mind is, have we found the bottom? Did we find the bottom late last year? Or is this just a short-term run and we'll see a deeper bottom or we'll test the 1200 line again this summer? There's no way to know. Until gold moves up through the 1530 line, retests it, and moves higher, there's, in my opinion, you cannot say that you've proved and the primary trend is reasserted. So we're just going to have to see. As far as I can tell, the charts on gold and the fundamentals look very good for more rise than what we've got here. But remember, one of the most important things driving the price is buying from Asia. And if China isn't slower growth and it's going to reform shadow banking, that's not good for purchases of precious metals coming from Asia. The long-term demand is going to be very strong, but short-term demand, that's not good. So we're just going to have to see whether this rise is a short-term rise or if it's longer, and summer will be the test, and anything can happen. CIA in the hot seat, Senator Feinstein, is really bad that the CIA has hacked Congress and, can you imagine this, possibly violated the Constitution. I think I posted another article from Snowden speaking to the Young Techs, a very interesting, you know, he continues to be a very persuasive, very eloquent speaker about the many, many violations of privacy by the intelligence agencies. I also posted a photograph of President Kennedy visiting the grave of James Forrestal. Finding that photograph in Michael Sala's new book was an absolutely profound experience. Forrestal was a former Dylan Reed partner, and I describe sort of my awareness of him and his assassination, said to be a suicide, but I believe to be an assassination, when after he resigned as Secretary of Defense. And Sala goes into the fact, something I didn't know, that President Kennedy was close to Forrestal, had a relationship. Forrestal had tried to recruit him to work for him when he came back from the from his military experience. And so there was a relationship there that I never knew of. And if for anybody who's studied the history of the breakaway civilization, covert operations, and the black budget, that's a very meaningful fact, including the fact that he would visit Forrestal's grave in May 1963 during the time when he was trying to really assert command of the black budget forces who didn't want to be commanded. So one of the things I learned in Sala's book, which I hadn't known, was that the CIA had been in charge of Area 51. And frankly, you know, that means thousands of facts that I could never make sense of sort of clicked in and everything started to make sense. Daniel Hopsinger, in his book, Barry and the Boys, about the Mena, Arkansas drug running operation, he told the story that Barry Seal, who was sort of one of the lead drug dealers out of Mena, had the logbooks in his plane had shown that he had stopped by Area 51, presumably to drop off cash. Well, if the CIA was responsible and had been appointed by Eisenhower to take responsibility for security in Area 51, you can very much easily see how the Mena, Arkansas drug operation would be dropping cash off at Area 51. It makes a lot more sense. There were great stories in Sala's book about Eisenhower. The more I learn about Eisenhower, the more I like him. But the one Sala told was that apparently Eisenhower had authorized the creation of Area 51, you know, and had set the CIA up to do the security. But apparently the CIA was responsible to report to him about what was going on at Area 51, and the CIA and the group responsible were cutting him out of the loop, and he got very angry and called in two of the liaison from the CIA and proceeded to tell them that unless he got the reports he wanted, and he got them right away, he would go up to Colorado, get the First Army, and invade Area 51. I believe that story is probably true. Another thing to endear me to Eisenhower, one of my favorite Eisenhower stories was a book about Bechtel, where the defense contractor, a defense contractor executive, tried to persuade Eisenhower let them to privately own a nuclear weapon. Eisenhower was duly appalled, and these are all various incidents leading up to his farewell speech. He did not like that anything goes bit either. The reason I bring this up and sort of Feinstein getting so mad is that for so long, the dialogue in our elections have been, we have not been willing to address the deeper story that we're scared of. I'll never forget being out in California and this very sort of prominent progressive era saying to me, I would never support you. I don't want to piss off the CIA. So, you know, and what I said to her was, well, I guess then there are no solutions. We're all just terrified of the CIA and anything goes and we'll pretend it's okay. So I think, you know, if we want to have a real election and we want to have a real conversation, then we need to talk about, you know, who are these invisible intelligence and enforcement powers who listen to our phone calls and, you know, read our email and invade our privacy and, frankly, have been covertly terrorizing and assassinating Americans for decades. You know, an honest conversation would be real progress, especially if we could address the real button story at the same time, because part of the double bind that the people at the CIA and the NSA are in is they are responsible to keep the central banking warfare model going. And that means you got to run around the world and bag heads. It's not a pretty picture. And as long as we require them to deliver the subsidy, you know, they're in a double bind. So under the category of please don't miss it, there's an article about the Bank of England informing Parliament during testimony that it had shredded its financial crisis era records. It's a little tidbit, but it's a reminder that he who archives writes history. I had so much fun when I was litigating with the federal government. You know, we would subpoena court records and they would be miraculously have disappeared. It was quite, you know, it was quite the shredding wars were amazing. And there's been lots of shredding going on since the financial coup. One of the reasons I believe that they, the breakaway civilization folks have started the reinvestment is we have managed to shred pretty much everything. The statute of limitations is up. Funds have been shifted around that pretty much the trail has gone cold. But the article on the Bank of England was just a little tidbit and reminder of how this really works. It's called knowledge management.